WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
The Senate narrowly passed President Trump's tax and spending plan in a 51-50 vote. Now it's off to the House. The legislation could have major implications for Americans on Medicaid, especially those with disabilities. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Over 70 million Americans are covered by Medicaid, but if Trump's policy bill is passed, over 10 million people could lose their health care, according to the Congressional Budget Office. And like I said before, Americans with disabilities will be particularly affected. According to the health news org KFF, more than 1 in 3 people with disabilities are covered by Medicaid. Now, it also creates new eligibility and work requirements for Medicaid coverage, threatening more than 15 million people with disabilities who may no longer receive health care. So to learn more about the potential impact for folks in the Chicago area, I spoke with Sebastian Knowles, a policy analyst at Access Living, a local nonprofit resource and advocacy group for people with disabilities, and David Gaze, a disability rights activist who's currently covered by Medicaid. Now, David has said many times in the past, regardless of if you have Medicaid or not, this is one that impacts everyone. Now, here's David.
I'll start with myself. For me, it impacts me very personally. I use Medicaid every day to get out of bed in the morning. And I rely on, you can't see me because it's radio, but because I have quadriplegic cerebral palsy and low physical stamina and chronic pain every day. And I rely on this program to help pay for basic in-home care, personal caregiving, like bathing, dressing, toileting, and meal preparation. And without these basic services, I'm one of the 15 people that relies on it, and I would be literally unable to survive. My basic survival depends on Medicaid. And through basic help with my physical needs and community support, I'm able to live in the community. I attended graduate school. I'm able to sing in my church choir. So I'm not here as a policy. I'm not joining this conversation as a Medicaid policy expert. I'm joining it as a person who requires one of the 15 million people you mentioned who require Medicaid every day. And my basic survival depends on this program.
Yeah, I hear you. And Sebastian, you're nodding as David's speaking there, because again, David's laying out all of the ways in which Medicaid touches his life every single day. But to me, this is something that is, you know, even beyond folks like David. Like, we should all care about this and pay attention to this. Your thoughts?
100%. You know, I've heard a lot of conversation and talk about who will be impacted by these Medicaid cuts. And David is a prime example of an individual that is not sitting at home on a couch, not working, right? This is an individual who utilizes the supports, those home and community-based supports that Access Living vehemently pushes for time and time again to enable individuals to live with dignity and independence in the community, right? But we also need to understand that these cuts will impact those who live in rural areas with hospital closures, those who are here in the city of Chicago, where we will see clinics, healthcare providers that will be unable to provide some of the care that they have been providing so far because of those Medicaid dollars that they're no longer receiving, right?
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of that being shifted over into what we call those safety net hospitals, right? And we saw that the state devoted some funding to those safety net hospitals, but we will see time and time again, as the federal government pulls back on this funding, This will have to be made up by the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. Whether or not the state of Illinois has that money has been yet to be determined. But again, what will then happen to those state programs? Where will those cuts need to be made to make sure that people are protected and receiving the health care that they deserve, which is where we see that home and community-based services and other disability supports are at significant risk.
Well, you know, what you've just described are clear cuts to Medicaid. You just talked about some of the details in the bill with clear cuts. But what's interesting is that the White House just recently put out a statement, of just sort of a myth versus fact statement. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but they sort of go down all of the things within this one big, beautiful bill that have sort of floated around that they say is myth. And they come now with the facts. And so when it comes to Medicaid, basically President Trump is saying there will be no cuts to Medicaid, and that, in fact, you know, this bill is going to strengthen Medicaid protections for people relying on it and people with disabilities. And all it's doing is eliminating fraud and abuse. I mean, why are they saying that there's going to be no cuts when clearly they're removing funding?
It's what I classify as often as a war on reality itself, right? That Medicaid experts, health care experts from across the country recognize that these are, in fact, Medicaid cuts, right? This idea of fraud, waste, and abuse that is prevalent throughout the system does not exist, right? And we've seen time and time again that there are two states currently that have work requirements that have been implemented, right? And time again, those work requirements put a barrier to entry to Medicaid, make it more difficult for those who actually qualify for Medicaid.
Tell us specifically what the new work requirements are on this in this bill.
So essentially, the folks would have to report that meaningful and gainful employment. I believe it's about 20 hours. So individuals would have to then report that. And this can change and increase in the frequency of reporting requirements as well. So individuals may have to report more frequently, right? And that also goes hand in hand with some of those redetermination statuses. So you essentially go through on a year-by-year basis and you redetermine that you are eligible for Medicaid, right?
Yeah.
They may increase the amount of times that you have to redetermine your eligibility, right? So that ends up having individuals who struggle to actually report that, right? Whether that's pay stubs from your place of employment. And it can be difficult. And we saw in Arkansas that a vast majority of individuals that lost their coverage were still eligible, but they just lacked the ability to actually report that either that employment, right, or some of that redetermination eligibility status.
So, David, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on these new work requirements. What are you thinking?
Well, if I could just piggyback on what Sebastian said, he laid it out so well. As he alluded to, the vast majority of Medicaid recipients already do work, like myself, and the rest are caregivers. They're either caregivers, they're ill, they're disabled, they're in school, they're retired or unable to find work. So the fact is workers who receive health care and necessary medications are likely to be better workers. And these work requirements would also, since the majority of people on Medicaid are working, these work requirements would just provide onerous paperwork and excess paperwork for people who are already struggling living their lives and trying to contribute to society. I mean, these are disabled and chronically ill people with hospitalizations, pain issues, stamina issues, care needs, and they can sometimes contribute like myself, but they can't necessarily work 40 hours a week or in the typical way. So these work requirements would just provide onerous paperwork to people who are already struggling, to a population who's already struggling.
You know, and I'm struck by what you said earlier, right? You said, I use Medicaid every single day. I'm looking at a piece that you wrote online for American Magazine, where you say, I use Medicaid every day. I fear my lifeline is about to be cut. David, talk more about just the impact on your life that this bill is having.
Yeah, thank you, Sasha, for the question. This is real. We're real people with real lives, real stories, real hopes, real dreams. And I'm worried that without Medicaid, I could go in an institution, frankly. I could be out of my own community, away from my support community, away from my loved ones, and in an institution. And an institution means less funding, less staff, and frankly, it's far more costly for society to have people who require Medicaid in institutions than at home in the community. Mm-hmm. And it just creates It's morally wrong, and it just creates far more problems for not only me as a Medicaid recipient, but for society at large.
Mm.
So,
Sebastian, put that in context for us. I mean, David, as you mentioned early on, is one of millions of people that could be impacted by this across the country. But what are we looking at here in our city, in our state? How many folks are using Medicaid?
Definitely. So there are currently about over 400,000 people in the state of Illinois that are at risk of immediately losing access to Medicaid. So that's especially from that Medicaid expansion group, right? We have what is called a trigger law in place in Illinois. So if the federal match drops below 90%, then that immediately goes into effect, and those individuals would then have 3 months, right, left of Medicaid expansion.
That's it, just three months.
That's it. And they're then off the program, right? We know that, again, that there are millions of individuals, even in the state of Illinois, that are on Medicaid. So this impacts an abundance of people. And I do want to quickly hit a talking point that I know the conservatives often talk about. Undocumented immigrants do not receive access to Medicaid, right? That is purely through state-run programs like health benefits for immigrant adults that just ended in the state of Illinois, right? Because there's this misconception that we are kicking off people who are mooching, who are abusing the system.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go into the nuances about how undocumented immigrants are productive members of our society and are providing a benefit to our communities, right? But these are people who live around us, right? These are folks that are not only living independently like David, right, but are in nursing homes currently.
Mm-hmm.
And nursing homes receive about 60% of all of their funding through Medicaid. That's less staffing, that's more nursing home closures. And what we're looking at right now, that one in four individuals who are in nursing homes will be displaced because of these cuts.
So your thoughts then, and I'd love to hear from both of you, just to the fact that this bill narrowly passed the Senate, right? It's heading to the House now. It's being discussed as we speak. As we know, I'm hearing several House Republicans are pushing back on the bill because of the changes that were added by the Senate. But how does that make you feel? David, you go first.
Well, I'm fearful, but I'm also fearful for the reasons that I mentioned and we've talked about. But I'm also sad and frustrated that this is where we're at as a society, that disabled people basically have to fight for our existence. You know, it's Disability Pride Month for July, during the month of July, and it's the 35th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Mm-hmm.
And this, it should really be a time for disabled people to honor and celebrate our identities. And the fact that we're here, the fact that we're have to fight for our existence. I don't know if you saw the little lobbyists in Congress, like there was one on Senator Warren's page. These are 10, 11-year-old kids with people with disabilities, and they have to fight for their basic healthcare needs. It's not right, and we as a society can do better, and we should do better, and it's up to all of us to defeat this terrible bill in whatever way we can.
The fact that this is moving forward and still being discussed, Sebastian, your thoughts?
It's, as David said, it's frustrating. It's painful at times. And we recognize that, you know, there are representatives in the House, there are senators in the Senate that are more than comfortable with making compromises and protecting some of their own constituents or getting tax breaks on certain industries, like what happened in the Senate.
Yeah. What are the benefits that you think are swaying some of these Republican senators and congressmen to actually vote yes on this?
I think it comes down to this idea of we are cutting this fat that's in federal government, right? And in an instance or in a way that is going to better the financial security of the nation, when we know in reality that that's not the case. And not only are we cutting a much needed lifeline for millions of Americans, that we are inevitably leading to the deaths of individuals across this country. So I look at it as that not only do we have a fight currently at the federal level, right, and calling in, having conversations with representatives, not just in our own state, but across the country, but engaging our state legislative partners and saying that we need to be prepared and we need to understand that we are a community. We are here as Illinoisans, and we must address some of the challenges that we are going to face going forward and understand that we cannot leave communities out to dry. Because disability, no matter what, in the end of the day, does not care about your party affiliation, your race, your gender, your ethnic background, et cetera. That anybody at any time can attain a disability. And more often than not, people know, and I guarantee people on the show that are listening right now know somebody that has a disability mm-hmm. that will be impacted by this legislation. So it is incredibly important that we all know and understand what's going on.
You know, some people may not be aware that Trump's policy bill that's being voted on right now is actually something that might impact them. And I say this because Medicaid isn't always called Medicaid when you go state to state to state, right? I know that you have some thoughts on this, David.
Yes, Medicaid is called different things in different states, so that makes it confusing for people. But the point I want to emphasize, as you alluded to, Sasha, so well, is that Medicaid folks on Medicaid are real people. We're your friends. We're your neighbors. We're loved ones. So it affects you. It affects all of us, not just with hospital closures and not just with higher insurance premiums, but it affects our friends and loved ones. Chances are everybody here listening knows somebody on Medicaid. And I just want to end with that a budget and these bills, they're moral documents and they show who we are and what we value. So now is the time for us as a society to show who we are and what we value. So I urge people now to call their representatives and speak out. Tell the stories of your friends and loved ones, like I'm doing now, about why Medicaid is important to you and why it matters.
If recipients are no longer eligible for coverage, Sebastian, what should they do?
That's a difficult question to answer, quite frankly.
Is there anything that they can do?
As it stands right now, there are very minimal resources. There are individual municipalities, county level, programs, et cetera, that mm-hmm. can provide some level of coverage.
Anything Access Living is doing to help in the meantime?
In the meantime, because, again, as a role as a policy analyst, you know, we work in our advocacy department legislatively. So we will be working with our legislative partners and carving out what happens next, right? Whether this looks like providing incentives and financial assistance for individuals to enter the marketplace, the ACA marketplace, if they lose Medicaid expansion coverage, right? Or are we providing, again, that additional funding to some of those safety net hospitals, et cetera? There are an abundance of different pathways that the state can take. Yeah. It's really a question of how much are we willing to devote to protect the people of Illinois.
Yeah.
And understanding that we have limited resources, but we cannot leave our community members, our families, our friends left to die, essentially, with no type of coverage whatsoever, where the emergency room then becomes their point of contact with the physician and nothing else.
And David, what I think I'm hearing you say here is as the administration touts these $325 billion in savings, nearly 12 million people losing insurance over the next decade, the costs aren't worth the benefits here.
Absolutely not. It just comes down to what we value. What are our priorities as a nation, as a state, as a country? Do we value people on Medicaid? Are we a moral society? Well, now's our chance to show it. So
yeah, we'll leave it there for now. That's David Gaze, who's a disability rights activist and currently covered by Medicaid. And Sebastian Knowles, who's a policy analyst with Access Living. That's a local nonprofit. That's a resource and advocacy group for folks with disabilities. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having
Thank
me.
Thank you, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Gina Montagna and Micah Yasin. It was also mixed by Micah and edited by Daniel Tucker. Reset brings you the news you need to know. Subscribe to the podcast to never miss an episode. You can also visit us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.